You have no idea how tempted I was to play the Morning Edition theme. Just to mess with a listener from a show you're not even hearing right now. Hi, everyone. Welcome to A Song of Ice and Spoilers. For more on that joke, please see previous episodes of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live. This, by the way, my name is Luke Burbank. That's Andrew Walsh over there. This is our spinoff show about Game of Thrones. And we are talking this week about Season 8, Episode 4, Last of the Starks, I think is the most recent episode.
It is. Did you notice something? I didn't realize this until I heard somebody mention it on another Game of Thrones podcast. Did you know there's another Game of Thrones podcast? There is. Actually, one that I've been listening to for a long time now.
We sit on the Iron Throne, though. So, right. I mean, if anybody wants to try to come at us, they can. Sure. But this is obviously, we're the podcast of the Seven Kingdoms. So I don't care if somebody is the, you know, the warden of the north or the king of Storm's End.
Right.
The king of Storm Large, noted cabaret performer from Portland. This is, until somebody comes and takes the crown from us or takes the throne from us, we are the podcast about Game of Thrones.
And just a warning to you, I have a crossbow. I didn't realize that when until somebody pointed out on this other podcast, which I think is just called the Game of Thrones podcast, that they don't name these things until like the next day or much later in the evening. When I dial up to watch Game of Thrones and I watch it on HBO Go so that I don't have to wait until 9 o'clock airing on the West Coast. I can watch it as soon as it starts to air on the East Coast. And so I watched it at 7 o'clock local time here, and it still did not have a name. I didn't know until today that it was called The Last of the Starks. Okay, not the most interesting way to start the show.
I guess you could say that's a somewhat ironic title, because when the Starks get together and they say, we're the last of the Starks, what they don't realize at that moment is, of course, one of them is actually a Targaryen. More on that in a moment. Let's see. Things start off here, though, with kind of the burning of the dead outside of Winterfell. This is a chance for some just really strong scenery chewing by the various surviving characters, who can be very sad as they lower a torch onto the pall. The, what do you call that?
Pyre?
What's the... The pyre, thank you. The pyre that that some of the heroes of the show, the recent heroes of the show, are lying on. I will say, by the way, I saw a tweet yesterday that was very heartening to me. It said something about the people who love Game of Thrones the most love saying how bad Game of Thrones is the most. And I was like, thank you. I'm glad I'm not the only one doing it, because, of course, I love the show. But then I also am always kind of like, my thought when they were doing the burning of the people was, again, I was like, wow. Most people survived this. Like, I looked at that and I was like, not a bad ratio of living to dead, considering you were fighting an army of undead warriors. Like, this, you guys got out of this okay. Again, you know, Jorah Mormont, nice guy, had a, you know, tough time with the grayscale, shouldn't have been a slaver, you know, things were different back then. Lyanna Mormont, not the breakdancer we thought she was, because the internet lies. What is it? Baron Dondarrion?
Yep,
Derek
Dondarrion. Gone. Sure, Theon's gone.
Theon. I mean, Sansa crying over Theon. I was like, I guess they were. Was Sansa always that into Theon's program?
No, I think that it really showed the progression of their relationship.
Got
I
it.
Mean, going back to the, sure. the earliest shots of the show is like Theon kind of being, because he was like the ward of Ned Stark. Is that the right term?
Yes.
The Robin mm-hmm. to his Batman, I assume. And him always being kind of the outsider and not really like being their brother. And I think she was especially snotty to him, if I recall. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after all of this and his loyalty and everything he's been through at the hands of a butcher that she also had to deal with, like, I think that all brought them together. And then she pins the wolf pin on him, right? So in his final act, he is
right.
a Stark.
That's a big, very symbolic way of saying you are for eternity a member of this family. So that happens, and they kind of say goodbye to their dead. And then there's like a big party scene, which I couldn't help but think to myself, I guess they were some – I said this last week, but – I guess that they just, like, the battle happened so quickly, they were fine with the rations. It seemed like a pretty, they had plenty of wine and plenty of meat. And the concern had been a few episodes, how are we going to feed all these people? But mm-hmm. apparently things turned out okay.
Yeah. Can I mention one?
Please.
I was just going to say, back to the pyres, though. I didn't think that it made sense that there were... We saw so many people die. Like you said, like most mm-hmm. of the main characters, you know, made it through. That's all... you know, part of the narrative, but just on, like, we saw so many red shirts die, and then there's like, I don't know, 10 pyres. And then, by the way, 6 people go out to set them on fire, and there's more than pyres in that. But like, there is not enough dead in that shot. And also from a practical level, move it further away. Like, you know, mm-hmm. there's a lot of land out there, you know, it's yeah. like the exurbs out there. Like there's plenty of room sure. to spread out, go further away, because all of that dead body soot is just going to come right sure. back down into Winterfell.
Yeah. Those are called cremains. If we right. learned anything from the Big Lebowski, mm-hmm. it's that wind and cremains can really ruin a very special moment when you're yeah. saying goodbye to someone. Like so many that died at Khe San and the Red Keep and River's End. Is River's End a thing? I feel like it should be.
The River's Edge is a great 80s movie, but it's dark.
Okay, that's what I was thinking of. I think part of the fact that there weren't as many bodies, I assume it was because like a lot of the Dothraki that died kind of further out.
Sure,
and maybe,
okay.
like yeah. either became the dead or they were just like they were destroyed beyond being something you'd want to pile up on a funeral pyre. Was how I made sense of that. But I don't
like know. Maybe they were just honoring some of the major players in the battle. Not that we knew all of their names, but maybe this is a special honor and there's still just like piles and piles of dead and undead.
I think it
re-dead.
Had to do. Well, you know what? You actually might be right about that, which kind of sucks, honestly, if you're thinking about it, like particularly if Dany is if she's supposed to be the breaker of chains, some anonymous Dothraki should get the same burial treatment. Pyre treatment as Jorah Mormont,
mm-hmm.
really.
You would
We're
think.
Trying to be kind of equal, a little bit more of an equal society here. But anyway, they go inside and they start having a real party where apparently a Starbucks cup showed up.
Yeah.
Which now HBO has edited out of that scene. So if you have it recorded, I guess you can watch it. I watched it last night. I didn't even notice it. I saw a still of it online today. Did you see anything more on how a Starbucks cup actually ended up in the scene? That's crazy to me.
No, I mean, this is a very small nitpick, but it's called a Starbucks cup, but apparently it was a craft services cup. It didn't have the official Starbucks logo on it, and HBO sure. it did release a kind of a fun... I mean, if you're going to deal with something like this, I like the way they dealt with it. They released a press release that said something along the lines of the craft services coffee cup in the scene was a mistake. She had ordered actually an iced latte. Or something along those
uh-huh.
lines.
That's ha-ha. Pretty good.
Yeah.
So they're all up there. They're just drinking copious amounts of wine. People are pairing off. Do you have anything you want to say about what goes on at that party? There's clearly they're showing a lot of kind of unspoken drama between Sansa Stark and Dany Targaryen, and to some degree Jon Stark, who's kind of caught in the middle. Everyone's having a good time, but there's a lot of tension happening up at the kind of head table.
Yes. I think that really to get to the part that I think is interesting is kind of while all this is going on, as you say, people are pairing up. And of course, one of the big hookups is Jaime and Brienne, who were playing a drinking game. Brienne, who's not somebody who ever really drinks. She's getting drunk during this drinking game. And then they go back to her chamber and hook up. How did you feel about that Jaime-Brienne hookup?
Well, I mean, I guess I have to trust. I didn't read the books, but honestly, I never thought Brienne was straight. But maybe that's just me assuming something because of how she comported herself.
Well, she was. So her whole thing, though, was she was always madly in love with Renly, though. Remember,
oh, okay.
that was that's
I
how she's introduced.
That,
she's like protector of him, but she's deeply, madly, madly in love with him, which is why it totally wrecks her when the smoke monster kills him.
Okay, I guess what I thought was even her love for Renly. Again, I'm saying I made a big assumption in this. You can't do this, I guess, even in Westeros. I assumed that she was not straight, and I assumed that her love was a love of loyalty and that she was not romantically interested in Jaime, or I guess I totally forgot about the Renly thing. But But even with Renly, and I'm sure there might have been dialogue that totally belies what I'm saying. But in my mind, I was like, Brienne is a person who's totally ruled by honor and code. And if she promises to protect someone, if she is tasked with protecting someone, she will do that to the death, and she is very loyal. So I guess I just always assumed all of her emotion around things was from a position of loyalty, not from a romantic love position. But I guess that was not the case. And I guess that the Jamie thing was a little weird because he's like, drink more wine. And I'm like, bruh, what are the consent rules in Westeros? Like, we're getting her drunk so she'll do this thing that she didn't seem initially that down with. But then, you know, who knows what the heart wants? Somebody wrote on Twitter, I'm going to be a little crass here and I apologize, but somebody wrote on Twitter, this is the problem with good D. The good D has Brienne in a house coat standing outside of a house begging Jaime not to leave. That's what good D will do to you. So Brienne's character really went from being a knight to being this like incredibly powerful warrior to like in a house coat begging Jaime, please don't leave me.
Yeah, let's skip ahead to that, because that's so they hook up. I don't really have a problem with that. Genevieve's, like, while we're watching it, booing it because she wants to see Brienne and Giant's Bane hook up. Because,
well, me too.
Yeah.
Honestly, I thought that was where I thought everything was going. Although I guess that's a less interesting, it's a less complex hookup, because, you know, I actually thought, honestly, when Jaime followed her, I thought he was just trying to kind of – honestly, I'm so living in 2019 in my brain. This is literally the thought that I wrote in my mind. She's drunk. Giant's Bane wants to have sex. She can't give consent. Jamie's running interference. That's literally what I thought was happening.
Well, it's
like
interesting.
It's 2019 and they're at a rave.
I want to come back to that where we skip ahead and then he's leaving, because that's really important. But I do want to say, you know, I was listening to the Nerdette podcast about this yesterday. I love, you know, and Sagal joins them for their recaps, and I just love that. I hadn't known about it, actually. Maybe I'd caught some wind, but Kiki recommended I listen to it, and it pays off. Like, when one of these episodes ends, you want to kind of live in the world a little bit, and, like, I just really trust them as commentators. And one of their listeners kind of was really frustrated.
Meanwhile, we're the official Game of Thrones podcast where you come to hear about other Game of Thrones podcasts.
Right, exactly. How many
that
have I named
That is a service
yet?
We provide.
Two so far?
Two.
But, and counting. We're the Game of Thrones podcast with the bells.
Does Brock Heward have one?
We're the bellsiest. It's the intersection of faith and thrones. All right, listen, I keep on starting to say things and then I can't finish them. What was I about to say? Oh, well, one person was talking about how she was really frustrated. This is a viewer of the show who had called into this other podcast. And she was just like really, really frustrated from like a feminist perspective, how Game of Thrones was handled from just this particular episode, from the show's only woman of color dying and some other complaints as well. I will say I really didn't like it when Brienne totally just crumbles. Like, she falls for one guy or has one night with one guy, and now suddenly she can't keep her composure, even if she's feeling like major emotions when Jaime decides at the end of the episode to run off back to King's Landing, which we'll talk more about in a little bit. I did think that is not in her character, just to openly blubber and ugly cry like that. The right. Actress is great, by the way. The crying scene, like, I think that she did it well, but I was disappointed in that. But having said that, I will say, like, trying to judge Game of Thrones, and maybe this is just the difference of, you know, what has happened in the 10 years or whatever since the show's been on the air, and since more than that, since the books have been out. But, like, if you're somebody who's been in this universe from the beginning and potentially read the books, like, there was nothing about – this is not a feminist story. Like, and I'm not saying that's right or wrong, or that maybe – I mean, you just – this story has been – I mean, this world is anti-woman, like, hardcore. The way the show in the past several seasons has, you know, tried to make concessions and make it more of a 2018, 2019 show, I understand that. And I don't know. I don't know what the responsibility of a show is, but having a frustration with this show saying, I don't want to watch this because I don't think that it really holds up from a feminist perspective, is like, well, yeah, it doesn't. And maybe it's not the show for you, you know, like it's interesting to see the show try to kind of make concessions in 2019. And I'm not trying to be just an asshole guy about it, like, oh, grow up or whatever. But it's a really hard thing to mesh. I mean, the original books are just terrible and brutal and just really upsetting.
I don't want to also at the risk of skipping ahead from where we're trying to get back to. I do think it's interesting. Talk about the modern world, like 2019 world versus Westeros. I got a strong, strong feeling that when they're talking about their plan to go to King's Landing and attack Cersei, and the question of if the people will understand that Cersei is bad for them, and that she'll and how she'll, you know, she'll basically put out fake news to the people in King's Landing. I felt extremely strong overtones of Trump. Basically what they're saying is, no matter what we do, the people – Cersei is going to lie to the people, and they're going to believe it. And almost like what we're actually doing or saying is going to be kind of irrelevant because Cersei is just a liar, and she'll lie to the people, and she's not loyal to the people. She doesn't care about her subjects. She has no – And they were just talking about this kind of world where kind of what – because I can't remember the specifics of the conversation, but it's when they're having the strategy meeting still in Winterfell. And they're talking about basically how it's going to be received, what the people in King's Landing are going to do, what the kind of, you know, subjects of that area are going to do, if they're going to rise up against Cersei or not. And they're talking a lot about basically the nature of like truth and facts and the narrative and who gets to control the narrative and what happens if you just don't care about the people and you're willing to lie to them, and then who will get the credit later or the blame. It just felt very like, to me, like you're writing about the Democrats trying to take on Trump, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, okay, yeah, great. Well, this city will burn to the ground, but the people who are being burned will think it's Hillary, you know? Like,
right.
But the emails, like, it just felt to me like, and maybe I was reading into it too much, but it had an extremely 2019 kind of undertone to it, to my ear.
I see the parallel, definitely, and I think maybe that even did occur to me, but it didn't bother me. It didn't feel like pandering to me. It just seemed like, this is kind of – and it also doesn't seem like – you know, Trump didn't invent this kind of thing either, controlling the narrative, controlling, you know, the media. And I think it's actually an interesting turn. I want to go really big picture here and just kind of talk about this, because now we're getting at the real heart of the show, right? Daenerys is always caught between wanting to win but also having an ounce of morality and trying to, you know, break her of chains. And also she wants to break the wheel. Is that what it is? What was her expression? Like, if it's this constant circle of violence of people claiming the throne and she wants to destroy the system. I can't remember exactly what the term she uses is, but she's caught between, she does in this case want to go in and just blow everybody up with her dragons. But her advisors say, listen, you can't win the hearts and minds if you're going in and just killing all the people. And if you remember early on in Meereen, like, she's trying to like be the people's ruler. And so she's tries to like, I don't remember the details of it, but remember, like, I think she nails some people to poles along the road the same way previous rulers had did it. And it was like she's always sort of struggled with this morality, and I think we're seeing that come up again. Genevieve hates it. I really like what the show is now doing with Dany in this season. It's actually one of my favorite things. People like Genevieve think that like her character has changed too quickly from somebody who was really smart and had a big heart and knew how to lead and make right, just decisions. And now we're seeing like kind of a different side of her. But I think this is them playing with perspective again and actually bringing in. I found this episode way more interesting because you're seeing this clash of, well, I don't want to burn all of the innocents in this entire kingdom or whatever you call King's Landing. But on the other hand, can you win and can you take control when the person you're dealing with, in this case Cersei, doesn't have even a modicum of that kind of justice or right from wrong morality?
I thought that the scene with Dany and Jon talking about whether or not Jon should tell anyone who he is, that's obviously a really critical and pivotal scene in the episode and really in the whole show, because I feel like what's happening with Dany is, as she's getting closer to actually being on the Iron Throne, it's kind of like, I think she's It's like it's as you talk about Andrew on the show, the last mile problem. It's like she's so
that awesome.
You talk about
that wonderful joke
do,
that I made yesterday, that one that went over huge. Yeah.
For more on that joke, I refer you to yesterday's episode of TBTL. It's like she's so close to it now that it's – and I think – you know, I think everyone can identify with some version of this feeling of like when you're almost at this thing you've been working towards, there's a tendency to want to just be like, okay, fine, let's just get it done. Mm-hmm. Like that last mile of the push, it's like, okay, I'm gonna break a few eggs making this omelet, but then I'll be on the throne. Like – I think as she gets closer, like literally closer in proximity to the throne, obviously, I think the harder for it is for her to demonstrate restraint because it's right there. She can take it. And this is, you know, this has been everything. This has been the whole sort of motivation of her life, I guess. But the fact that she's just so like – the fact that she's not – she can't even sort of consider the idea that the world can know about John's actual provenance and that she just wants him to lie. Like instead of – look, then this is not a female-friendly narrative. But instead of just maybe being like, well, guess what? He's actually in line ahead of me for the throne and he'd probably be a pretty good leader. And hey, I did a lot of good. Instead of that being her take on it, she's just like, you must never, ever tell anyone because that will fuck up me getting the throne. So she's clearly laser focused at this point.
Yes. This to me is the key scene. And this is what I keep coming back to about how I feel like what we're getting with Dany now is a matter of perspective. Because my initial reaction when watching that scene was very much along the lines of what you just described. It felt like even when she's kind of tearfully saying, John, just don't tell anybody. Just don't tell anybody, please. I'm kind of – and then all of a sudden when he says, no, I must or whatever he says nobly. And then she just like kind of turns off the waterworks. You kind of get this impression like, was that all just theatrics? Is she just like turning on the crocodile tears? Are they alligator tears or crocodile tears?
I believe they're dragon tears.
She turns on the dragon tears. And then she turns them off. And you're like, wait, this moment of emotion, was that all just you trying to manipulate John? And that kind of seemed out of character to her. But then, again, having talked to Genevieve, who I don't know exactly how she feels about that scene, and doing some reading and listening to other things, like I've totally come back around on that scene. And I think that John is actually being the dumb one. Like it depends on what your perspective is, because John is sitting there saying, I don't want the throne. I want you to have the throne. I want you to have it. She's like, great. Me too. Just don't tell anybody. Like, that's all you have to do is not tell anybody. You can still be super noble. There's nothing noble about telling anybody. Like, just shut up. Like, we can all get what we want. So I went from feeling like they were portraying her in almost, like, to go back to feminism, almost in a way that I was somewhat uncomfortable with. Like, now she's just manipulative. There's, I think, different ways of reading that. And, like, I just keep on going back and forth on her. And to me, that's what Game of Thrones does well. We always use Jamie as the perfect example of a person that was lower than low in our esteem who is now, you know, one of the heroes of the show. And it's about perspective. And it's about the fact that people, or as you like to say, shit be complicated.
I think that John wanting to tell the truth is because John is a very simple guy.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's not even – it's to John, if you're going to do a heist, don't bring Jon Snow on the heist.
No.
If you need someone to be – like if you need someone to take something to their grave, don't let Jon Snow in on the secret. Not because he's a catty little bitch who lives for the drama and the tea spilling. It's because he's just such a morally upright person. It would be impossible for him to hold on. It'd be impossible for him to lie by commission or omission. And so that's the problem. He's just not, his brain is just like, well, this is the case, and my family is saying I'm their family, but I'm actually not their family. So I can't let that you know misunderstanding of the truth go on. But it's not because he's hoping he becomes king. I mean, that was a very affecting scene between him and Tormund, that mm-hmm. goodbye scene.
Yeah.
I thought that was really sweet, actually. And you know that he would be like, oh, fuck, I would go to the North I'd go like to be on the wall in a minute. Like, he wants nothing to do with any of this stuff. And so anyway, John, to me, it's like, John obviously could just lie for the rest of his life, but I just don't think he's even capable of that. He's just too simple in his brain.
I agree. His brother, Rob, kind of similar too. Like, you don't want, you don't want John going on a heist with you, but if you are running a police department and you want an internal affairs investigator, John Stark is your boy. Because he will always you know, live by the code. But yeah, he's simple, and in a certain way,
it's tough for him to do undercover work though, because he's covered in like owl skins.
Yeah, no, he definitely stands out.
This guy wearing 74 raccoons tried to sell me crack.
Who's the new guy?
I didn't buy it because something was off. He had a huge sword.
Yeah. I didn't notice. I thought he'd always been here. Anyway, to me, that is really the heart of things now. And to skip to the... Actually, before I get to there, can we go back to Jamie leaving Brienne and Brienne just kind of crumbling about that? This is another one where I'm watching it and it seems, and I think the show producers want you to think that, oh, Jamie is leaving Brienne because he's saying he always loved his sister and he still does, and he wants to either save her or be with
Heck
her.
No. But he is going to try to kill Cersei.
So 100%. Why does he think that he needs to be the one to kill? Just because of this bond of twinship, that like this is his twin, this
is
his lover?
I think he thinks that Cersei still loves him, even though Cersei did send Bronn to kill them. But I think that he knows that he still has some special in with Cersei, and it will allow him to get close enough to at least try to kill her, is my theory. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that he's doing that thing to Brienne where he's like, he's doing a reverse go on get.
Yeah.
Get out of here, you. Right. You never been worth nothing. But he's saying it about himself because he's aware of all the terrible things he's done, and he feels like he's helped create and perpetrate this monster that is Cersei, and so it's on him to go. And when he hears about the dragon dying, like when he hears that things are not going well up there, that's when he's like, ah, shit, I got to go up there now. And I got to like probably die in the attempt to take her out, because I can first of all, he probably knows King's Landing pretty well. And also there'll be some point at which he'll be able to get access to her in a way that most other people wouldn't. Wouldn't you think?
I definitely have come around to that. I could be wrong, but I think that the writers wanted that to be wanted a little misdirection, and it took me kind of a day to like digest the stuff and be like,
oh really?
I think I fell for that. Yeah.
Well, that's nice. That's a fun experience in a show.
It is. Yeah. No,
No joke. Because I didn't fall for it. I was kind of like, you know, I was like, oh no, he going up there to kill her. But maybe I fell for something. Maybe he going up there to bone her.
No, I don't think so. I think we're right. By the way, that reminds me. I think on this show, I mentioned I misconstrued a prophecy by the old frog lady. There aren't tons of context in which you can say that makes sense. In the books, and there's a nod to it in the show, Cersei is a little girl, and she and her friends go out and talk to some old soothsaying crone. And I don't have the details in front of me. I should have probably written them out if I was going to bring it up. But in the book, she mentions three prophecies that'll affect Cersei's life. Like, will Cersei be married to a queen, and like we've seen, or I'm sorry, will Cersei be married to a king, and will we have kids? And we saw how those things kind of played out in the real world. In the book, there was a third prophecy that is not mentioned in the TV show, and I think I mistakenly said that it has something to do with her dying by a golden hand. That's not true. But the old frog lady, whatever her name was, in the books, that's not true. I think I said that, and I think I was spreading hashtag fake news, because I looked it up yesterday, and it's something along the lines that she will be killed by her younger brother, is how it's said. But Jaime and Tyrion would both technically be her younger brother, because Jaime came out of the womb second. So anyway, so that is the third prophecy that was not included in the TV show, and I'm wondering if they left it out just because it was too obvious. So I don't know.
There's that moment where Jon is trying to kind of, in the strategy meeting before they leave Winterfell, where Jon is trying to kind of side with Dany, even though Sansa is saying... I mean, that also felt to me like a little bit of a contrived moment in that scene where all Sansa is saying is like, hey, can we lick our wounds for a second?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then Dany is like taking that as insubordination. But I don't think Sansa's not saying we're not going to fight with you. She's just saying, give me a minute here.
Yeah.
It's been a minute with Sansa Sanders. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I feel like the reaction from Dany was because they're trying to really just show that like Dany's looking for a fight. But I didn't think that would really be her reaction because I didn't think Sansa was defying her.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely cranking up the tension on that. And maybe part of it is what we're now describing as the last mile problem, that Dany is just getting maybe a little bit more kind of erratic and hungry for that throne. And so is making some decisions that aren't right. Like, it's so funny. Like, I side with her advisors in saying, like, first of all, take a breath here. Let's regroup. Let's lick our wounds, as you say, and we will be a stronger force. Also, let's maybe try not to kill, you know, tens of thousands of innocent civilians when we try to take this. There can be a better way. And she's just kind of like, no, I want to go in now, and I want to go in dragons ablazing. Yet somehow...
She called J.G. Wentworth. It's my castle, and I want it now.
What is that from?
That's from those TV commercials. It's my money, and I want it now. It's one of those structured settlement companies that they used to have in Westeros.
Right, right. But her advisors clearly keep leading her astray, and so that's kind of got to be building on her frustration as well, right? Because, you know, they say, we're going to split up our forces for reasons I still don't know, and we're going to surround it. And then what happens is, you know, Cersei maintains the upper hand, and Missandei loses her head, you know, if I'm saying her name right, which I may not be.
Yeah, that was a jarring scene when the dragon dies. That was intense. Again, I know it's not a real animal. Also, the dire wolf. Come on, dude. Cue the Sarah McLachlan music. I will remember Wolf. What's his name?
That's Ghost, I think, right?
Like, come on, dude. Like, I was so... Like, I know that that's not a real animal. I know it's a computer generation, but, like, that had me tripping. I felt so sad for the wolf, even though the wolf will have a way better life. The wolf is going to live in a farm upstate beyond the wall where it can run around.
Tons of room to run around. But I was kind of surprised there that he didn't say goodbye to Ghost. Like, there was no – not even a little pat on the head. But I guess that's, again, just my – I love dogs. I don't know.
I think that some of it would be – I like that we're going to now analyze Jon Snow's behavior towards a computer-generated wolf. But I think it's like – he couldn't even handle it. My guess is it would be so emotional for John. It would make him so sad. And also, it's a go on get. This episode could have been called Go on Get because it's kind of like he just doesn't want to belabor it. He doesn't want to make Ghost more sad. He just is like, this is what it is. Ghost might try to follow him if he like – if he gives him too much love. Ghost is like, hey, are we leaving? What's going on? What are we doing? So
nobody say who wants to go for a ride because Ghost will just go crazy.
Exactly. No. Don't get the leash. Don't get the leash. Ghost is going to see that.
All right.
Okay, now we got to take Ghost on a walk because we can't get the leash if the dog sees the leash.
Where are the T-R-E-A-Ts?
But so that, you know, was kind of animal emotion. And then the dragon dying, it was brutal. And I guess, was that just a tactical error by Dany? Was Euron hiding in some fjord? Like, I didn't really get that whole thing. How did she not know that was going to happen?
That to me strained credulity. Like, I felt like this show was more frustrating in a good way, as in characters are making bad decisions, but you can understand the universe in which they would make some of these bad decisions. It wasn't what frustrates me about the show is when I feel like it's bad writing. Mostly that, or bad directing, or corniness. I still think that like things are scored with music now in a much more corny way. Those things, from a filmmaking perspective, kind of bug me. But when the characters make kind of dumb decisions, but you could see and understand why they'd make them, I'm totally fine with that. This is a show about flawed people, right? But it drove me crazy that, like, how do you have that? What's the point of even flying a dragon if you don't have visuals? I mean, you're way up. You're higher than anybody else. You should be able to see if there's an entire goddamn fleet below you before suddenly you're being racked or wrecked by these bow and arrows, which apparently have gotten a lot better since they were introduced.
Yeah. Like, did nobody think of that? Really big arrows?
Yeah, I mean,
That's a real tech disruption.
Yeah, like, right. You know, the arrows we were buying were too expensive and too small. So we bought an arrow factory in Germany. anyway,
that is a good spoof, my friend.
And also,
that is a solid spoof.
I think this is a directing thing. But then we see her bearing down on the boats on her dragon, and it seems like she's close enough to like just open fire. Like, I understand that you got to be somewhat careful, but they just shot all of their big ass arrows. They're going to reload for a second. You're barreling down on them. Just add some fire to that mix. But instead, she just like pulls away. I guess the thought is like she didn't get close enough to do that and she wanted to protect herself. But that was bad directing. It was very confusing.
Yeah, what I saw there was that they didn't need to reload. There were enough ships that hadn't shot their thing. And I thought the perspective on it was off because it looked for all the world like they should have been able to kill her and the dragon from there, from that position. And she was obviously about to try to blow the fire on them, but she made this decision that if I get close enough to blow the fire on them, I will be close enough that they can hit me with those mega arrows. And so she basically pulls a hard right and decides it's not worth it. But the way that it was shot, she looked way too close for that. They looked like she looked closer than the other dragon was when he died.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I just wish they just should have made her appear to be further away from the ships. They wanted to build the dramatic tension, but they did it in such a way that I was like, oh, well, they should just shoot her now. I don't want her to die, but I was like, they should just shoot her because she's way too close. I was like, is the flame going to burn up the mega arrows? That's what I was literally wondering in my mind as she's getting close because I'm like, she's in range. They're going to get her. But then, you know, she pulled out. But again, that dragon dying was really a bummer to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know it's not a real thing that ever lived, but it was just like, oh, man, through the neck.
But that's growth for you, though, because you didn't even care about the dragons when this show started.
That's true.
You hated the dragons. You wanted less dragons. Now you have less dragons.
Good point. Now I'm mourning the dragons.
Yeah, which I like. I'm not saying that to tease you. I legitimately like that they actually did. There's still some corniness with the dragons, but they were able to give you real emotion when the dragon, you know, the CGI dragon got hurt. I think that's a victory for the show and for us as viewers.
I guess you're right. So they're down a dragon and they, of course, then this whole thing happens with their fleet. I guess the part of it is they're not real, like, they're not great sailors. That's not their thing. They're just trying to get to King's Landing, right? So they're just destroyed in an instant by Euron's fleet.
Who the dragons are?
No, the people, the folks from, you know, Tyrion and Varys and everybody who's on those boats that are going over and the Unsullied. Although, boy, the irony of how sullied the worm has become. I don't mean he shouldn't be sad, but I mean this is the whole thing, right? The worm's diving back in the water, swimming towards his lady friend, and I'm like, this is why you castrate people. We're trying to keep these – like, oh, you've made these warriors that were unsullied. They're fairly sullied.
Can I call the episode today Luke Burbank, quote, this is why you castrate people? Or should I just make it a poll quote that I send out on Twitter?
Can you fire it around the American Public Media Slack channel just so that our bosses know that we're still creating quality hashtag content?
Can we put it on the wraparound at headquarters that everybody can see from the sidewalk, the news ticker outside APM?
Yes. Trump increases China tariffs. Full stop. Quote, this is why you castrate people, Luke Burbank.
Luke TBTL Burbank.
/ Song of Ice and Spoilers.
Right.
But honestly, like, that was, you know, it's like a lot happening in a short amount of time of just like the dragon dies. It's super bummerific because that's like a big key to them taking King's Landing. And then they're also ships are totally destroyed. They're in the water. What was her official title with? As far as like Danny's, was she Danny's trusted advisor? Was she Danny's vice president? Like, what was her actual job description?
Honestly, I think she was chief marketing officer. oddly enough. But, I mean, she had a lot more responsibility. I think it was one of those things where her title didn't really properly kind of explain all of her different responsibilities, but it was like it was because of a pay scale thing.
Mm-hmm. The union thing.
Yeah, that's my understanding of it.
So they end up at King's Landing, and the thing that I didn't quite understand is it still a given that they basically have Cersei outnumbered? What about the, you know, what about the what are they called? The sort of hired mercenaries that she's...
Oh, yeah. What is their name? I can't think of their name right now.
But, like, I was under the impression that Cersei actually had them kind of outgunned. But the premise seems to be that, like, they can take the castle from Cersei. They can take King's Landing and the throne from Cersei if they want to. It's just how much bloodshed are they willing to sort of sign off on. But isn't that kind of new? Because with the fighting they did Winterfell and stuff, weren't they decimated? Are we just taking it as a given that they have her outmanned?
I don't know. I'm not sure who holds the cards here, and I'm not sure if we're supposed to know. The Golden Company, by the way, is the name of that the hired army.
Well, they say it though. They're saying it a lot. At least at least on the kind of Winterfellian side, they're saying it a lot. They're like, we can take her. We have the dragons. We have the Unsullied. We have the Dothraki. With the Dothraki, we have left. We have, you know, they seem to be very bullish on this.
Well, they're saying all kinds of shit. Tyrion. Everything they're saying is wrong, though. I mean, everything that they're saying, every battle they've gone into, except for the one with the dead, has been kind of a disaster for them. So just because they're saying it doesn't mean it's true. To me, it does not seem like, I don't know. It seems like...
I know, there's that moment.
Oh, go ahead.
Keep going.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, like, it's very confusing to me because clearly they think that they can win in a land war. There was something like that. Well, like, Euron, if we draw him out of his boats and bring him into land, we have the upper hand. I remember somebody saying that. But it also seems like, well, wait, how many armies were you able to get on the ground? Is the Red Keep totally surrounded? Can Euron come from behind and kind of outflank you? Like, there might be answers to these questions, and I'm not a close enough observer, but I'm pretty confused as to what the layout of this battle looks like. If only there was like a giant room with a huge map on it and chess pieces that people move around to explain it to me.
Yeah, that would be helpful. So then there's the big dramatic scene where Tyrion sort of blows past Qyburn, which, by the way, that was the thing I was about to talk about. Was it's funny that, like, the perspective, like, I was just buying. I was like, well, yeah, they got her. Like, they could totally take her down if they need to. And then Qyburn's like, oh, no, you don't understand. We're winning. And it's like, what do you mean? And then he's like laying out the case for why they're winning. Mm-hmm. Their side is winning. So I guess it's all, like you said, about perspective. And then Tyrion kind of like just jets past him because he realizes this is just like not really working and goes up to Cersei. I definitely knew that. I want to call her Melisandre, but that's not her name. What is her name again? Can we get confirmation on this, the spelling?
Missandei, I think.
Missandei. I definitely knew. I thought, unfortunately, I had a feeling Missandei was dying because it's like, of course, like, it's off brand for Cersei to like be all like, oh, good point. I'm sorry. We don't need to fight about this. Of course, she's going to Cersei's going to Cersei. So, like, I knew the whole time that Tyrion's talking to her that she's going to basically just like turn around and behead Missandei. And I thought maybe kill Tyrion. Did you have a moment of thinking, is this where Tyrion dies?
I had a moment of thinking, I wonder how this will happen. I would have been really shocked if he had died there. For some reason, it didn't seem like the right time. But again, it could have been one of those shocking moments. I was really shocked when Missandei lost her head. I don't know why I was so shocked, but it really did surprise me.
Yeah, I figured that she was going to die because they basically where the episode ends is Dany is clearly about to lose her shit. Like, whatever amount of restraint she was able to bring to bear, seeing Missandei die, somebody who she loves and has championed and who she thinks of as a dear friend and trusted advisor, seeing Missandei die that way, I mean, this was that lit a fuse on Danny that I think is going to lead to the death of many, many, many people.
And didn't you, though, feel her rage? I thought the show did a really good job of that. Like, when it ends, like, as you keep, again, going back to my broken record theory here now, because I just keep saying it, like, I'm just, with these episodes, I've been going back and forth, and I feel like she's become less and less redeemable, and now she's becoming more redeemable again, and when that all happens, I thought that was an amazing end of the episode. Like, when do you remember what her last words are? I can't remember. Burn them all or something. I'm just like burning with rage on that last shot when Danny is like walking back to her army. I'm just like, burn them all, Daenerys. Burn them all.
What did Missandei say, by the way? Was it in like her? I didn't understand what she yelled. It was, she said something in her native tongue, but I didn't know what it was.
That is where I think what she said. Attributed that quote. I think what she said was burn them all in Dothraki.
Whoa.
I want to say. I read that somewhere, but it was probably Twitter, and it went by very quickly. So let's see. This
was it Lyanna Mormont breakdancing? Because that may not be the best intel.
Let's see here. No, that was actually in the I think she says Dracarys, right?
Right.
And I think, that's what I'm looking at now.
That is a cologne I wore in eighth grade.
I think that I can get you an answer on this, but I probably need a little bit more time to do it. High Valyrian word for dragon fire. That's her last word.
Whoa.
She says Dracarys, and that means dragon fire. So that's pretty sweet.
Kind of, but I mean, what is she calling for? Like, dragon fire? Yeah. Kill everybody in this courtyard behind me who are just trying to get out of the way of danger. I mean, this is, again, this is where we started off talking about the question of, like, feminism and this show and how much of this show needs to reflect our thoughts in 2019. And it's like, it doesn't, but also when it's doing a really good job, I do think it makes you think about the modern world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is a classic problem of, like, you know, human shields. And, like, if she's, like, dragon, she's about to die, which sucks, and she's, like, human shields.
Yeah.
Or she's like, burn up, you know, burn this place up. I mean, I don't know if she's really thinking about this in that moment, but she's really saying, like, take them out, you know, let God sort them out. Well, it's like, that's a lot of people dying, and that's the whole thing her and Danny really teamed up over in the early days.
Exactly.
Was not doing that kind of stuff.
And I'm just along with them on the ride. Like, I feel really conflicted. And I'm here for it. I'm conflicted, and, you know, I'm more of a make sweet, sweet love, not sweet, sweet war kind of guy. I got the tattoo to prove it.
Yeah,
so
that was really a bad idea.
But you can, when you feel Danny's rage, you just want to light the match for him.
It's, I mean, really what you want. Okay, so this would be an easy out. And I both hope that the directors and writers take it, and I hope they don't. Which is, of course, the answer to this is some plot device where Arya many faces through the friggin' thing and ends up in Cersei's chambers, and it's all of a sudden it's like, wait, you're not my massage therapist, and then brute kills her, or like Jaime sneaks in through the back door, or somebody swims in through a sewage grate, and you know what I mean? In other words, because one of the things they set up was it's going to take a fortnight for the troops to show up, so they're basically saying we've got a month to think about this, and that, and during that month, it's like, what's going to happen? Like, I don't know if it ends with a titanic battle in King's Landing. They're buying some time for somebody to sneak into King's Landing and somehow kill Cersei, which, that's the end of the show, I guess. Well, maybe Cersei dies, and then the last show is something between Jon and Dany, which would be really intense.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know if this is the appropriate time to do it, but I think I just found my favorite scene, or my favorite quote from the show, and instead of me butchering it, can I just play this for you? This is going way back to the party scene, and do you remember what Giant's Bane says? Now, let's take a listen before you answer it. This had me lolling.
I saw him riding that thing.
We all did.
No. I saw him riding that thing.
That's right, you did.
I did. That's why we all agreed to follow him. That's the kind of man he is. He's little, but he's strong.
Oh, no.
Strong enough to befriend an enemy and get murdered for it.
I think I pulled up the wrong scene. I'll just say it. My favorite line is when Giant's Bane is, I think, talking about how brave they were as they fought, you know, talking to his brothers at the party scene. And then he just turns and says, "Now, which one of you cowardly bastards shit my pants?"
Oh, my God. There have been multiple times in my life when I wish I had that line at the ready. That's the greatest line maybe in the history of the show.
I love it.
Also,
so
I was
much.
Like, don't broadcast that if you're trying to pick up chicks. Like, but definitely don't lead with that.
But to me, that also – that's so in character for him. Like, in a certain way, he does care what people think. But in another way, he's like, I got to be me. I got to be me.
Yes.
And he seems to do okay.
I love
except
it.
For when it comes to
– I mean, honestly, what do you think the BAC of his beard is?
Like, I know.
It's like it's 17,000 times the legal limit, just his beard hairs from overflow of ram's horn consumption.
Yeah. I often do think about how much he's wasting.
Yeah, I know. I also think about the actor who I love that guy, but I think about him like just like the 17th time he has to do that scene. And they dry his beard out.
Yeah, right.
They put the fake wine in the ram's horn. And they're like, go for it again. And he's like, like pouring it all over himself. And he's all wet. And they have to change the outfit. It must be so time consuming.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a hardcore going for it move of drinking. He's basically Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds, but set in Westeros.
Ogre or Booger? Is Ogre a different character?
Ogre's the big guy.
Oh, okay.
Ogre's
right.
the big guy, and he's in the fraternity with Ted McGinley, and then Booger is one of the Lambda guys. He's one of the nerds,
right?
As it
were. He's the coarse nerd, and that's why I kind of got him a little confused.
He's the master of burping,
right?
And other such delights. So I don't know. What did you have anything else in your notation? Anything else that you want us to talk about? What did we miss anything?
Just
Arya turns down Gendry,
right? Which is good. That was one that
was
I sort of
sweet.
It was
I would
sweet. I saw it coming a million miles away.
Of course,
like you know that's fine. But you know, I thought the scene was maybe a little bit tropey. But generally speaking, I'm glad that she didn't pull a Brienne and just say, you're right, let's get married. That was in character for her. One other just plot point that we should mention, although I don't have any, believe it or not, I don't have any keen insights on this, is Bronn finally getting to the north, or I guess not to the north, but where does Bronn confront Jaime and Tyrion?
I assume that was Winterfell. Is that not Winterfell?
How is everybody moving back and forth so quickly again? They got remember that things really zipped around last season. Now they're moving around real quickly again. Anyway, so Bronn finally confronts Jaime and Tyrion. We know that Cersei has asked him to kill both her brothers, probably somewhat influenced by the prophecy of old Froggy Lady. It's unclear kind of what's going to happen there, although I'm starting to think that Bronn doesn't make it out of this series alive, probably.
I agree.
Yeah.
Of course.
And also, I mean, it's very... actually, that was a really big point when... this was key Game of Thrones to me when Tyrion and Varys are talking about, again, like, what is the realm? Like, this was that was good classic Thrones for me. Like, I am here for the realm. Well, what is the realm? Well, the realm isn't just the people who are fighting for this stupid throne, but everybody else who lives here. And you kind of get an answer on that. And then, like, Tyrion saying, please, you know, he doesn't say it specifically, but you get the impression that...
Right, because Varys is basically advocating for, like, taking Dany out.
Yeah, at this point, I mean...
To me, is like, I don't think Dany's behavior has anywhere near risen to the level of, like, we have to assassinate her. Like, it may get there by the end of the series, but, like, that seems a little premature on Varys' part. Like, she hasn't done even one horrible thing. She's been conflicted about stuff. She's showing signs of aggression and defiant oppositional disorder. But, like, I don't think that it's like, what are you going to – I mean, if you were to kill Dany Targaryen based on what she's done so far, that is king slaying or queen slaying to me.
I think people are just feeling itchy about it because of her dad. the Mad
yes.
King.
Yes, and it definitely runs in, you know, runs in her blood, and she does have a big giant fire breathing lizard, so that could go sideways really fast.
Yeah.
But like, do you think? Let me ask you this as we wrap this up. Do you think that the final episode will be a battle between the forces of Dany and Jon and Cersei, or will Cersei be dispatched in the penultimate episode, meaning the final episode will be somehow Jon versus Dany?
I think the next episode will be, we will have a big battle and resolution as to whatever happens between these two opposing forces. And then the final episode will be, so I think it'll be like Cersei and her armies, you know, versus Dany and her armies. And then I think the final episode will be figuring out the details of who actually sits on the throne. What was that
intake?
What
if the whole final episode is just couples therapy?
That would be great.
With Dany and Jon. That's definitely an SNL skit waiting to be mm-hmm. performed. But like, they just like, you know, they defeat Cersei, and it's like, oh my God, we have the Iron Throne, and then like Dany sits on it, but then Jon just kind of takes care of, you know, the family and stuff. But then it's like Jon feels kind of purposeless, and they go to therapy and they just work on it. I mean, I would watch that. I'd be happy. I have such a complicated relationship with this show because I don't want anyone good to die anymore. But I also feel like the show's not being true to itself if I'm not like feeling sad about people dying, you know, like also, you know, by the way, peace and love. The Hound can die for all I care. Like, I don't dislike the Hound. In fact, the Hound has a certain roguish charm, but he's not happy. He is not a happy camper. And when he's on that road to King's Landing, he says, basically, I'm going up here to die. And when Arya says, by the way, Arya running everything at the end would be interesting because he says, I'm not coming back, right? He doesn't say I'm going to die, but he says, I'm not coming back, which reads as he's going to go die up there. She says, me either, which is like, I don't think she's saying I'm going to go up there to die. I think she means I'm going to go up there and rule the friggin' Iron Throne.
That would be interesting. I don't think that she's a good ruler. She's like, there are those who are great fighters and those who are rulers. Now, I know that Robert Baratheon was a fighter who took the throne, and that's kind of in this world the way it works. The people who...
what about Jon Snow? He's a great fighter, and...
Yeah.
And everybody seems to be betting on him as the best ruler.
But there are people who live for the fight. And I think Arya is the person who lives for the fight. I would say that Jon is a good fighter, but he is not somebody like he feels more like a ruler than a knight, you know. And Jaime and Arya and Bronn, these are fighters. That's how I feel. I'm not saying
so
I'm
does
right.
That mean when Arya says that, is she then that she's not coming back? Is she saying that she's also assuming she's going to her death?
I don't know what the fuck she means, because I would hope that, you know, like as somebody kind of rooting for her and the Starks, I would hope that she, you know, takes care of business down at King's Landing and then makes her way back up, and like she and Sansa and whoever else can, and, you know, maybe Jon too, can kind of just like rule the North. That's what I would hope. I would hope that like maybe like Arya, I would think would maybe be a good like... Warden of the North. So I guess that is a leadership role, but that would be something, you know, like that she would have the respect of the Mormonts and, you know, all of those northern peoples.
So if the show ends with Dany sitting on the throne, I guess in King's Landing, does the throne have to be in King's Landing, or is that just where it was? Does the throne move?
I think it's collapsible. Yeah. I think it, they designed it so they can be moved.
Has small wheels on the back. You can tip it up on its back and wheel it.
No, I think it's got to. I think it's symbolic, but I think it's got to stay there.
Really?
I don't know.
Because I mean, well, but the Lannisters have not ruled forever, right? Where was it when the Targaryens ruled?
I think it was there.
Oh, really?
At King's
was that
Landing, yeah.
Previously where the Targaryens lived?
Because the Lannisters come from what is the ancestral land of House Lannister. It's the place that Dany's army and the Unsullied tried to take over, but Cersei was one step ahead of them.
Highgarden or Meereen or something?
It's not either of those. This is going to be frustrating for everybody.
Well, here's the thing. It's called King's Landing, so it probably makes sense that that's where the throne lives. Okay, so would you feel okay if, as a viewer, if the show ends with Dany sitting on the throne in King's Landing and Jon and everybody else is heading back north, and peace prevails in the land.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Casterly Rock, by the way. My apologies to Casterly everybody who was frustrated with that. I was frustrated with that, Casterly Rock. But that's fine. I mean, I love the Starks being in the north. I mean, you know, I think there's a... I don't want it to be corny, but when we start, like, there's relative peace in the realm. You have the Baratheon on the throne, and you have, you know, you see, we kind of start with a somewhat as rough and tumble and cold as it is. You sort of see an idealized North with, you know, Ned Stark and the clan running it. So I don't think a lot of people, I think, are saying, I can't remember where I'm picking this chatter up from, but I think a lot of people think that either, maybe this is my friend who is saying this, but that either Jon will live or Dany will live, but it's very unlikely that both will survive the series. I'd like to have Sansa and Arya, one of them be Warden of the North, and maybe they live and work together up there. I'd like to see Jon get to go back to the Wall or some shit, or go to the True North,
right?
Like the way Tormund said, like, you're always welcome in the True North. I would totally accept that. Let Dany actually, break the cycle, break the system, sit on the throne, and be a good ruler.
Yeah.
But that's where we run into issues, where if she comes in as, you know, the Mad King's daughter and burns half of the civilian population, yeah, then can she really be the just ruler who broke the chains? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's. I thought this was a good episode too. By the way, like, it left me quite interested. I never watched the preview for the next episode. Mm. I just forget to, and I actually was like, "Oh wait, what happens?" And then I watched it. It didn't tell me anything, but that was my level of excitement at the end of this. Was like, I would definitely watch another one of these if I had it on demand.
I think it's weird that the entire is supposedly, and I don't know if this is true or not, they're saying the next episode is going to be like a bottle episode, and it all takes place in a Starbucks. So,
mm-hmm. It all takes place in a Tully's.
Yeah.
And Michael Avenatti is the Night King.
All right. Do you have any last thoughts on the Thrones? I think that's all I had. I really wanted to power out with the actual quote of Tormund with his "Which of you cowards shit my pants?" But oh well.
Well, you still can't find it?
No, and I feel like when you
do, you want me to just shit in my pants and just say it, so it has the ring of truth.
You know what? You will do anything for this podcast, and I want you to know I really appreciate that. Oh.
All right.
Good ep. Good ep. Two more to go. Right.
Hey, any other Game of Thrones related podcasts that we can need to promote here at the end of the show?
Those I have only listened to two in my life. I will.
Well,
say,
I know that Northwest Nerd has been doing a lot of good work on this topic.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. So. A bunch of people have been saying, hey, get Nick back on the show, Nick Jarin. But they are doing, over at Northwest Nerd, they're doing their own recap, so you can check them out over there. And also, I think we'll get Nick on. I'm schedules are a little bit of a problem because he's got a day job and we do this. But I'd like to try to get Nick Jarin on the show to recap the final episode, which, as listeners pointed out to me, will not be happening when we're in Australia after all. There's only two more left, not three, which means we will be able to do it from the comfort of our own studios. And hopefully we'll be able to get Nick to join us for that if we can make the schedules work.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back here next week with another Song of Ice and Spoilers. Until then, please remember, no tangent too long.
And no detail too wrong. I think I proved that today.